I think most people would think that the trees by the Med Center are really beautiful.
I'm sure they are.
That's part of the beauty.
I know.
Well, the Aboriginals used to believe they were standing people. I sort of believe that. Welcome to Radio Free School.
It's
like two trees and it joins into a loop, like this sort of. So it comes down and then joins.
Okay.
We climb on it.
So what are you doing here today?
We're trying to cut it down. Cut all the trees down and put a roof through it, drop the trees, and we don't want them to cut down our favorite tree. Well, the Aboriginals used to believe they were standing people. I sort of believe that because a tree at home looks like it's a person. Like, it has two sort of deep down things that look like eyes. And there's two, I think there's two branches on either side, and it looks like arms. So it really does, like, seem like it.
Are they chopping all these trees down?
Yeah. This any time, like this today or sometime soon. Because basically we're saying, like, if visitors are going to come to the campus, you know, in their cars, they should go right to the parking lot and then walk in. We could save this area and make, you know, maybe bring bikes down here and pedestrians.
As an undergrad, this path was kind of like a meditation space of a reprieve from kind of the concrete and that, and just the winding path. And as Randy was just saying, you have concrete or the pavement there of the parking lot that people could walk up and down, but obviously they've chosen to walk up and down the path in amongst the trees, this winding little path. And if you kind of close off your peripheral vision, you can't see the concrete monster of McMaster Hospital or the site building, and it's a nice little space. And so, yeah, this is how I got onto campus and left campus for 4 years, and it was a very important sort of space. It's kind of one of the good memories of university for me. So, yeah, it's just interesting that they want to destroy this, and even if they want to create a grand entranceway to the university, somehow big old trees aren't part of that grandness. I'd be interested to see what it is. I think it's kind of concrete pillars and and you know, that sort of grin.
And what's your name?
My name is David Jeffress.
What did we just move?
We just moved the no parking things so that they think you're allowed to park in there, and then the cars will come in until they can't do the construction.
So can you tell me what one is your favorite tree, and describe your favorite tree?
My favorite tree has these two branches that are really thick. They come out of the actual tree. One's lower and one's higher, and the one that's higher is harder to get onto. First you have to get on the lower one, then you have to get on the higher one. We also block the tree off by putting a fence, a small fence around.
In the place where you were, now face where. Think about the place where you live, wonder why you haven't begun.
So do we just have the floor kind of
sure,
thing?
Sure, oh, absolutely. Okay.
We raised some concerns about the front entrance design, right. And especially the way it's bringing the cars into the campus and the destruction of all those pine trees along the side of the hospital. One of our major concerns is about the process that got us to this point. A lot of people, originally when this road was brought up, or this entranceway was brought up a few years back, there was a widespread community and campus opposition to it. And then, say it's psychology, for example, most of the department was opposed to that road. They were surprised when we found out that it had come up again, seemingly out of the blue. Again, concerns were raised, and then the steering committee was struck to deal with some of the concerns. During the steering committee meetings, one of the results of that process was an open house on mm-hmm. March 24th, where there were alternatives provided. I would say slightly marginalized in the presentation that day, but there were alternatives presented. We never heard back from the result of the open house. People who submitted comments were invited to submit written comments. Never received word until May 5th, when we got this email just on the general users list mm-hmm. announcing that this road was going to be going through starting today. So sort of the idea of the process not being transparent enough.
Okay.
And if we were just standing out there this morning, and we could just stand there and ask people, students, faculty, staff at the hospital, if you ask them, a lot of people have no idea this is happening. So we think that the sort of transparency of the process, as well as the sort of outreach, hasn't reached enough people. Secondly, the alternatives haven't been, I think, fully explored, including Dr. Bates's from engineering proposal that would sort of bring, instead of bringing the cars down to the central campus with this vista, would take them more directly to the parking area, which we think was a decent, but maybe a philosophically different kind of proposal. Okay. We were hoping that we could get a halt to the destruction of the trees until such time as these issues have been raised in the campus and the community.
Let me speak first about the plan. The campus plan, which was approved by the Board of Governors several years ago, clearly depicted the issue of a main street entrance. Mm-hmm. That whole issue was discussed quite openly at open houses back when the campus plan was being developed. The team that was brought together to discuss the open house looked at all of the issues around this road, all of the safety concerns, issues around pedestrians, bikes, buses, cars. The various options that were created were sent to a community open house for feedback, and the feedback that was received supported the original campus plan proposal. And the results of that were taken to University Planning Committee, which is, of course, an open committee here on mm-hmm. campus. It then went to the Planning and Building Committee of the Board, and it then went to the Board of Governors, where all of these issues were discussed mm-hmm. and brought to the attention of the various constituents.
But even the people on the steering committee that had mm-hmm. concerns weren't notified about the changes. So there are professors on the committee who didn't receive any feedback from the open house, no acknowledgement of how that went, what the comments received, how that was being dealt with, if it was being dealt with. Mm-hmm. People on the steering committee didn't hear anything about it, let alone people from the community who came to the one, I mean, there's the one open house in the student center. So, I mean, it depends on who you ask and who can okay. find out about these things, who can participate, and what kind of answers you'll get.
This is a very busy campus. For every person who comes to me with concerns about increasing cars, I have a person who comes to me wanting a parking spot closer to their building. And they are at two ends of the spectrum. And we're trying to find this balance in between. And finding the balance means that those individuals at the ends of the spectrum will be unhappy with that balance. Mm-hmm. And that's our challenge right now. Now, you had a question and wanted to ask if the trees, that issue there. We have had, over the past few years, arborists look at those trees because the trees are not doing well in that location mm-hmm. because of the way that they were planted and the age of the trees. Linda is working on a landscape master plan for campus. You'll see the campus moving towards native species. You'll see us moving towards strategies to support and maintain the trees that we do have on campus.
The student center, I don't know who was responsible for that, but there were supposed to be trees in that area,
They didn't live.
It was a very bad design, frankly.
So those are mistakes that have been made.
I think most people would think that the trees by the Med Center are really beautiful. Right?
I'm
even
sure
the
road,
and
I know.
You know, that's part of the beauty.
I know.
And I've heard two different reasons for that. One is their age, and the other one is David, when I asked him on Saturday, said that they were sick, like that they had been checked by an arborist and were unhealthy. I don't want to say I don't believe it, but I'm not sure.
Well, that's too bad that you don't.
Because in the original email that came out, it said because of the age of the trees. And then when I spoke with him, he said, no, we had an arborist come in, and they said they were sick. So I wanted to get verification.
They're not doing well. If you look at them, they've been planted on a berm, which means they're at the top, and all the drainage is leaving them. They've never been getting the proper moisture levels that they require. And they're not a good tree for that kind of a location, and that's certainly something that we're trying to do a better job of when we come up with the design for that area, finding a tree that works best in that area.
Around, wishes of trees, the trees would be falling. Listen to reason, season is calling. Stand in the place where you live.
I guess the underlying concern is that McMaster as a campus on a whole is being invaded by too many single occupancy vehicle, too much car use basically, and it's spreading into Coots Paradise area where there's a huge parking lot down there, which is probably a floodplain that we're encroaching on the campus, and we could be preserving green spaces if we weren't just servicing private automobile and pursuing other alternatives. So I mean bringing cyclists and pedestrians across where those trees are now wouldn't need like this major widening and all this destruction. It's just like an incremental loss of green space over time, and there's more and more roads, more and more parking. I mean, I've been on this campus long enough to see a lot of it happen.
The campus plan clearly states that no more green space on the main campus will be taken away, that will not be used for parking. There will be no increased parking on campus.
Because one of the most recent alternatives was the Coots one. So the Coots leasing the parking space off
the one with the turtle.
Yeah.
That
didn't happen.
That didn't happen, but there was a group that formed to sort of oppose that. One of the things that people say to me all the time when they hear about these plans is McMaster should be leading the way and being innovative in finding solutions to these transportation issues. You've got to sort of choose at some point and show the way, and just sort of building wider roads, more parking for cars is not innovative, it's not creative, and it's not the way of the future. Mm-hmm. People look to the campus and they see Red Hill Valley writ small or these sort of same sort of principles at play where it's trees don't count, nature is just sort of something that you can push aside when you need it. For some other purpose. And I think, I mean, the original campus was supposed to be a lot different. Like, was initially going to be, had to preserve these wide open spaces and things which are being filled in as pressure builds population. I understand that. But I mean, the cars on campus and some of the design issues and just sort of sprawling parking and looking for off-campus satellite parking, at some point you have to draw the line. And I think that's an underlying, it'd be a challenge to the university, is to look at ways of leading the way out of this morass that we've created as a society in North America with the car. And I think as long as you keep supplying the car with what it needs, you're going to have people driving, and the alternatives will be less likely to be used.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
I'm Tony Hendry. We're up at the Leslie Forest conservation area, and we had forest defense training that was all about how we can protect both urban and deep forests. So we talked about Red Hill Valley, we talked about many of the boreal forests in Canada and the States where big logging companies are just stripping the land. We talked about native rights. We looked at different strategies, you know, like if you are arrested, things like, you know, don't have your ID, and if you got a camera, make sure you get rid of it, because the police will go through these things and a lot of people can be incriminated. We had a workshop on tree climbing, how to get up a tree just with one single rope up there, first aid, map reading, how to go through the forest very quietly. So people cover themselves with mud and ashes, and did this special catwalk so that no one could hear crawling along the forest. We also looked at the legal issues involved, what rights you have in Canada and the States. Interesting that in the U.S., you don't have to give your name, have any idea or anything, but in Canada, if you don't, you do have to give your name, address, and birth date. And if you don't give those, then they will not release you. It was great because we had about 60 people, like-minded people, sitting around the fire telling jokes and stories and how to keep encouraged, because people have been in this fight for a long time. One really key thing that helped me was to, when you're there to protest, make sure that you have a spokesperson, one person, so that messages are really clear. And you should have about at least 3 or 4 or 10 clear points that everyone knows, and almost like a slogan, so that when they ask you a question, you're going to appeal to people's emotive values, like, you know, Canadians are concerned about the environment, so we want the Red Hill Valley. Not even get into a debate with the reporter, because then they can dissect it and make you lose face and make the whole issue just go down the drain. So have some real key issues about our rights, you know, our children, that we want nature there for our children, stuff like that. And that the companies and the highways and things like that, those are the cancers to society, not us as protesters. We're trying to do a good thing. If you're being interviewed and you realize that what you're saying can be dissected and used against you, wave your hands in front of you so they don't use that visual clip. I guess if it was on the radio, then you could say, don't use that clip, but they could dissect that still.
Okay, so was it well attended? Were there a lot of...
Yeah, there were like 60 people there.
And what kind of age group were they there?
Everything from 15 to like 65. Yeah, and then we had the Grassy Narrows people were there, telling about the situation up near Kenora. People from the States, it was organized mainly through the University of Guelph, some students and ex-students who were there. About a month ago, there was an Air Clean conference put on by the City of Hamilton. And there was a lawyer there, and she talked about issues like the Red Hill Valley a little bit, and she said that the Ontario Municipal Board has a regulation that you cannot destroy urban forests, which is what Red Hill Valley is. But unfortunately, because the decision to allow the expressway was in 1985, almost 20 years ago, they're able to bypass that. But that's insane. Like, if it was okay to beat your dog 20 years ago, it wouldn't be allowed today. But because there's so many political issues here and economic issues here, they're able to bypass that. Like, it's bizarre.
Think about direction, wonder why.
I'm Chomsky. You're listening to Radio Free School on CFMU 93.3.
If wishes were trees, the trees would be falling. Listen to reason, reason is calling. Your feet are going to be on the ground. Think about direction, wonder why.
I'm going to play a song I made up myself, and the name for it is In the Temple. And I teach myself. Mommy, I have so many ideas bubbling into my head.
Okay, where does our garbage go to?
Glenbrook.
Landfill.
Yeah, that's where it goes to. Okay. What's the next question, Eva?
Where does hazardous waste go?
In our community.
Hazardous waste. Yeah.
Landfill in Sarnia.
Okay, so who knows which watershed do we live in?
Spencer Creek.
Right. How about Madeline Brumman? Okay, when we turn on our taps, where does the water come from?
Lake Ontario.
That's right. When we flush our toilets, to which body of water does the water go?
To the ocean.
No, it's closer. Coots?
Coots Paradise.
Coots Paradise. Where did your food on your dinner plate last night come from, Bromley?
The store.
Mm-hmm. Where else?
Plan B.
Who knows how long the growing season in our area is? Do you have a guess?
May to fall?
Yeah. I think we should look that up. Wildlife. Can you name 25 species of birds, mammals, reptiles, amphibians, trees, and plants in your local environment? What kind of mammals
do you have? Deer.
Human.
Deer, yeah.
And rabbits.
We have the cottontails. We have
chipmunk.
Beaver. Squirrels. Red and gray squirrels, yeah.
Foxes.
Red fox.
Coyote.
Mm-hmm. Long-tail weasel.
Raccoon.
Raccoons, yeah. Muskrat.
Fish.
We're doing mammals first. How about mink? Who knows a flying mammal?
What's a
bat? A bat, a hoary bat, or the big brown bat, or the little brown bat. Moles.
Yes! Flying squirrel.
Flying squirrel, yes. Right. How about we try and think about some amphibians?
Creatures that can live on land and in water.
Right.
Turtles.
Snapping turtles. Yeah.
Frogs. Crabs.
Yeah. Blanding turtles. Painted turtles.
Hens.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get to the birds in a minute. How about reptiles? Daddy said we have
alligators.
Garter snakes. No, we don't have. We don't have alligators in this area, Madeline.
Turtles.
Yeah.
No. Turtle crabs.
Yeah. The different birds.
Redbreast.
Yes. Red-winged blackbird. Heron. Yeah. Yellow warbler.
Hawk. Chickadee.
Red-tailed hawk.
Peregrine falcon.
Eagles.
Eagle. Bulldog. Eagle. Yeah.
Owls.
Great horned owl.
Fish!
Woodpecker!
Wood thrush.
Hoot
owls!
Yeah.
Okay.
Is there something with screech owls?
Screech owls. I don't think we have screech owls.
Blue jay and
cardmill.
Common yellow throat.
Robin redbreast.
Gold flinch.
Mm-hmm. Chickadees. Ducks.
Canada. What kind of trees have we got?
Maples.
Maples, yeah.
Sugar pine maples. Trees.
White pine.
Trees of leaf.
Oaks. White, oaks. Red, and black oaks.
Oaks. Pine trees.
Pines. We've got lots of pines. Hickories. Hemlock.
Willow.
Willow, yeah. Tulip tree and sassafras.
Sassafras
is nice. How about wildflowers?
Goldenrod.
Goldenrod, yeah.
Violet. Tulips.
Yes, lots of tulip trees, yeah. Lilies, water lilies.
Trillium.
Which bird species are migratory? Migratory and which are resident year-round?
Robins
migrate, and blue jays and cardinals stay all year round.
Chickadees.
Another question was...
And this one that says...
Black bear! Black bear!
Brampton said hopefully.
Really?
What are some of the most important local issues where we live?
Brown one.
Red Hill family.
What were you doing yesterday? Pesticides. Brahmin, how about sprawl? Sprawl is a big problem.
Green hills.
Sprawl, yeah.
Green
farm. The pine trees at McMaster.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite tree.
And who are some of the groups working on our, on the issues?
Logical.
OPOC is one, right?
Yes, Mama.
Mm-hmm. OPOC is working on the issues. Friends of Red Hill Valley, Beyond Pesticides, our group. Green Venture, Transportation for Livable Communities, TUG, CATCH. Who are your municipal councillor, your provincial MP, and your federal MP? Pollution, what are the major sources of industrial pollution in our community?
Cutting down trees makes lots of pollution. Mm-hmm. Cars.
Cars are the big one, eh?
Planes.
Stelco.
Acid rain.
Mm-hmm. One of the major contributors to greenhouse gas emissions, well, cars, of course. Cars are like the biggest vehicles, right? Which First Nation or other Aboriginal group lived in your area prior to the arrival of Europeans?
Six Nations of the Haudenosaunee.
Okay, what are the major geological events that shape the area where we live?
I don't know, can I say it?
Ice Age.
Yeah, last Ice Age and the big one. It was 11,000 years ago. What colour are the bricks and stones that are quarried in our area?
White and grey.
Grey
and red.
Red.
Energy. What portion of your electricity is generated using nuclear power, hydropower and fossil fuels? So 20% nuclear power, 20% hydropower and 60% fossil fuels. What part of the world does the gasoline and heating fuel we use come from? Some is from North American. There are also Middle East imports. And we have to give thanks to John Milton for helping us with answering some of these questions. Thanks, John. And this excerpt comes from Knowing Your Place from Alternative Journal, the summer issue.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for the sun in the sky. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the clouds so high. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the whispering wind. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the birds in the spring. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the moonlit night. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the stars so bright.
Myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.